Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is collecting debugging information for TX series. Today's presenter is Kevin Sager. Kevin is a level 2 customer support rep for the TX series and Kix TG products. He has worked with TX series for over 14 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kevin. Kevin, you may begin.
Thank you, David. Thank you all for joining today. I see there's a fair number of you out there, and let's get started. Okay, let's go to slide one. Okay, the agenda for today is the collection of documentation for TX series. What we're going to do is we describe what the debugging information is that we'd like, to explain what documentation is needed. We're going to explain when to collect the documentation for a problem. We're going to describe the different documentation collection scenarios, and we're going to show how to collect the documentation when there's an event, and to show where to send the documentation after you've collected it. Okay, let's move on to slide three. Okay, let's go over what debugging information is. Debugging information is the data produced by the region when a problem happens. It may be additional messages in the console logs or the CSMT. It may be additional files like system dumps or core dumps, stack dumps, and maybe even traceback files or ring buffers, and trace files if we have the trace turned on. Debugging information is more commonly referred to as problem documentation, or just doc for short, and from here I'll refer to it as doc. If when any of you have opened a PMR for a problem, you'll see that we usually ask for doc, and we refer to it as doc. So this could get you familiar with some of the terms that we use. Okay, slide four, please. Okay, why do we need doc? Doc is the only way we can do root cause analysis. The root cause analysis leads us to the event, the basic event that has triggered the problem. This may be obvious at first, or it may be fairly involved and in depth. A TX series is a complex transaction processing environment. A set of symptoms can be caused by a number of different issues. It's like an A5701 abend. There's many causes to that abend, and that when we get one of those in, we usually ask for additional doc at that point. When we do find more complex problems that we don't see in the initial doc, we'll ask you to collect an additional set of documentation, and this set may involve saying core dumps, triggering core dumps, triggering the transaction trace or the system the TX series trace internally, or maybe to instead of use a test fix or diag fix for the region to trigger additional information at certain points in time. Okay, slide five, please. When to collect doc. The best time to collect the doc is at the time the problem occurs. If we're waiting a day or two after you've noticed the problem, can lead to you missing files that may have disappeared or files that may have been overwritten, and the content that had some information that may be useful to us is gone. So when you notice a problem, it's best to gather the documentation at that point so you know that there is very little chance of it being lost or missed. Now when you collect documentation, it's good to check the timestamps and make sure the files that you're collecting cover the time the event happened. So if the event happened on, let's say, today, September 20th, sending us core files for back in July or traces that you took back in March for the problem really won't help at that point, because we can't correlate the logs to the traces or the dumps that were generated previously. So we need everything that's for the timestamp of when the event happened. Now, sometimes you'll see a problem and you'll notice it right away after it happens. Like maybe you'll have an ab bend, the region will drop, the region may hang, and this will be reported fairly fast after it happens. Sometimes you have problems that are happening out there and they're being logged and you don't notice them and the region keeps on running. There is some resiliency to TX series, and there is a fair number of problems that can happen that will become critical that may not affect the region right away. So it's good to take a periodic review of the various logs, like the console, the SimRex, the CSMT.out file, and check the dumpster one directory every once in a while to see if there's cores or system dumps or other files being generated in that directory. This also goes for the SFS and the PPC. These two utilities or facilities tend to write their problems, the messages in the message file for that for the facility, and if they rarely can indicate a problem back to operationally until it crashes. So you may have, in the SFS or the PPC, you may have a log file going full because of a transaction abended earlier and a few weeks ago maybe and caused the a bad transaction back out, and there's log files, or the log file has records in it back to that period of time. And that will need to be handled, and messages only appear in the console, or not the console, but the MSG file. And the only way you're going to notice it is to take a look at it. And this is one of the problems that will get serious enough where the SFS or the PVC will crash when the log file gets full. Once it does, you have a bigger problem on your hands than recovering it than what you did if you would have been able to notice it earlier. Okay, slide 6, please. Selecting the dock. For all IBM products, there is a must-gather document out on the web at the support sites for each product. TX Series has a fairly complex must-gather. Ours is 4 different documents. Some products have 1 or 2 documents associated with their must-gather. Here on the slide, we have the address, the URL of the must-gather. If you, when you get this presentation later, you can copy that down and go for it. But if you go to the TX Series support site and search on must-gather at one word, it'll turn up the document. And you can open it up and follow the instructions from there. Okay, the contents of the must-gather is fairly comprehensive. There's a list of questions there to ask you what type of problem it is, how it happened, and other events around it. There's a sample table there and a little further down to ask additional details on other software that may be installed on and used by TX Series. So sometimes we have issues with certain versions of certain software where we know they're there may be a bug that affects TX series. And sometimes this information is critical, and sometimes it's good to have in that we know what we're dealing with when we're looking at a problem. Okay, down a little bit further down the must gather is a list of standard items to collect. And in the standard items, there will be a list of files to go find and bundle up and send in. It includes the console MSG, Simrex, and assorted other dumps and trace files. Now, down towards the bottom of the must-gather are additional problem scenarios where additional dock will be needed. And these scenarios are hangs and loops and weights where we tell you to go out and collect stack dumps and cores. There's add-ins and crashes where we have you gather other information. And then we have the last document is for XA errors on what we need for an XA error when you see those coming across the console. Let's move on to page 6 or 7. If you're new to TX series, locating these files can be confusing. And so what I've done here is I've laid out in the next few slides where these files are at that we asked for in the must gather. And the most important files that we need are the console and the Simrex and CSMT out to start the initial problem diagnosis. So here you can see these files, the console, the Simrex, and the region name, are directly under the region environment or the region directory, which is located in the VAR directory. So to find these, you'll go to VAR and then KIX regions and the region name, and then the console, the Simrex, and also the environment files there. Now, with TX series, we have two environment files. One's input and one's output. The environment file that's named environment that you see in that directory is the input file, and that changes the environment for TX series. The one we need is the one with the region name and the extension of .env. Now, this is the file that's output by the region when the region starts up and defines its environment. So we can tell from this file what parameters that are set in the system that may affect TX series. This is good to have just as a reference most of the time. Every once in a while, we need this, and it shows it can help us in problem determination. Okay, the next set of files we usually ask for is the CSMT out, the CCIN, and the stats file. CSMT out is another log that contains errors and warnings that aren't written to the console file. This is a carryover from Big KIX, where they had the CSMT data queue directed to a printer in your operations room, and the operators would watch this printout and see what was going on in the region if something critical was happening. But what we've done is we directed it to a file and put it in the data directory that's underneath the region. Along with the CSMT is the CCIN. Now, CCIN tells us information about when the universal client or the CICS transaction gateway connects to TX series. And also in this directory is a file called stats file, or just stats. And this contains the statistical information from the region. This is a cumulative file, and it will continue to accumulate and until you remove the file from the directory. Once you do that, a new file is made, and the stats are collected again cumulatively from that point on. it's good to take this file and back it up every once in a while. And it can get fairly big, so we have to watch that file so it doesn't fill up your file system over time. Okay, the next location where information is located underneath the region is in the dumps directory, and underneath the dumps directory there's another directory called dir1, and this is where we place the dumps and the traces, traceback files, ring buffers, and all the other assorted highly detailed information. You'll see cores laying in here. You'll see system like sysa dumps, sysb dumps. You'll see transaction addends in this directory. And you can check the timestamp on these to make sure you gather the ones that are for the event that you're trying to collect doc for. Because there is, sometimes you can get, there'll be a number of dumps and cores laying in there from previous months that really don't need to be sent in. And these files can be fairly large, a couple, sometimes 100 meg, or sometimes I've seen one almost a half a gig large, because it was a very extremely large region. And transporting that up to our document collection facility will take time, and then it takes time for us to pull it down and take a look at, and then to see that it's not useful. So just verify that when you do send these files in that they are for the timestamp of the addend or the issue that you're having. Okay, let's move on to page 8. Okay, for ESFS and PPC, you can see the directory structure here is much deeper than what the region is. So going down this directory structure, it's still off of var, but it's under a different directory called KIX servers as opposed to KIX regions. And so this is the SFS server is down the SSD directory, then CICF, and then SFS, and then underneath that directory would be a directory for each of the SFSs that you have defined in the system. You may have one, you may have more. And the important files that are in this directory is the message file. The message file contains all the information that the SFS has noticed when it was running. If it has a problem and it generates a message, it'll be in this file. And what we do with this file is we timestamp it. Each time it's the SFS starts, we take this message file and we timestamp it and move it off with a different name so we have a history of events that were happening to the SFS, and we don't overwrite the file like we used to. In this directory too, you'll see if you traces and dumps for the SFS. You may see a ring buffers in there, or some PK traces that may be sitting in there from an issue. And if this is the default directory, where if you do start a trace for the SFS, it will be in here unless you have it redirected. Okay, for the PPC, it's down in the GSD directory, and it goes down to CICS, the PPC, and the gateway. Then underneath the gateway directory will be the list of PPCs that you have defined for that system. And maybe, as with the SFS, it may be one or two or multiples. And the PPC gateway is it's a sister server of the SFS. So you'll notice a lot of things in the PPC directory that are identical to the SFS. And that was by design because they're both what we call toolkit servers, and that's a carryover from the old Encina product. So in here, the same things apply about the message file and the traces of the dumps. We have to move on to slide 9. Okay, for the SARPC, which is our communications facility for inter-process communications for TX series, and we have a directory under CICS servers, and then which is called CICS IPC. Underneath that is the logs that you'll need. You'll find one called sarpcd.log and cicsipc.log. And if the sarpc generates any dumps, they'll be sitting in this directory. For the people that use the workload manager for TX series, there'll be a directory called cicsfm under var. And under it will be a directory called logs, and then the activity of the workload manager is captured in these logs in there. Now, the workload manager, you won't see any dumps or back dumps or cores laying in there because the workload manager is a piece of the TX series region, and it will come out. The information for workload manager will come out underneath the standard TX series dumps and logs that when it has an admin or finds an issue. So you'll need the workload logs showing what activity the workload manager was doing and the TX series logs to show any problems or errors that was happening. Let's go on to slide 10. With TX series, we have a facility called the admin console. And the admin console is a lot like the WebSphere admin console or the MQ admin console or the CICSTS admin console. The admin console allows you to monitor the regions, change the stanza files for the parameters with them, and a number of other configuration task you can do underneath this admin console. Now, from time to time, the admin console will have an issue or admin, and it will be in the installation directory for CICS. So, like on AIX, there will be installation directory is user LPP kicks, and under Sun and HP, it's opt kicks, and in Windows, it will be the default of C OptKicks, and unless you've changed it to install in a different drive or in a different directory. So once you get to the installation directory, there'll be another directory called WUI, and underneath that will be a directory called logs. And within there are the logs for the admin console that show the admin. Okay, moving on to slide 11. Okay, now we'll start to cover what to collect when a region is hung. When a region is hung, it's fairly easy to notice that it is hung because most of the times work stops. No transactions are processed. There's hardly any CPU used, and a lot of times when you try to get a terminal into the region, you're not able to do that. So when you try to get a CICSL term or CICS term in, it just hangs also. Okay, when this condition happens, there's a number of things we need to collect. We have a utility called CICS eDump, and this produces a system eDump of the region. This is the same thing as a snap dump. And that's basically what this command is doing, is issuing a snap dump command to the region. But since you can't get a terminal in, you can't do a CEMTI snap. So we've created this external command to generate the snap dump. You use it, you just type in the command, and then you give it the region name. It'll go out and snap a dump. And then you can go look in the dumps dir1 directory and see if one was created. If the region's really hung, it may not generate. I mean, if it's locked up tight, nothing will generate. Okay. And the next thing we'll need for this is a set of stack dumps for the region. To do this, we have utilities to help you with it. Now, we have a utility called dump CICS threads 1. Because it's actually the second version of dump kicks threads. And for Windows, we have a utility which does the same thing called CFPI. And these utilities are located in the CICS support page. You can search for them, and it'll give you a document that will have the utilities in them for download. And the third thing we need when you have a hung region is the standard doc that we ask for in the must gather, in the initial page of the must gather, which is the console and the CFMT and the SIMREX and so forth. When the region hangs, it's usually a fairly intense problem, and if you get a number of them, maybe coming back with a diag, so we can locate the events leading up to hang that we hang condition that we see in the dump threat. Okay, let's move on to slide 12. When looping is detected, you'll notice the CICS region will loop, and you'll see most of the time that the CICS AS process that's using CPU. Maybe one or multiple of these CICS AS processes chewing CPU. Okay, for this type of problem, we like to collect three sets of the stack dumps. Here with the dump threads command again, but you'll see in this dump threads command, we change the end parameter for the number of times to dump. We change it to three because we like to catch that three different sets of stacks. And then on the I parameter, you'll see that we have it set to 30. So every 30 seconds, it'll collect the next set of stack dumps. So overall, when you run this command with the collecting three sets of stacks, it usually takes like 2 minutes for it to complete, or just under 2 minutes. The Windows systems, the CSPI, you use that again. It by default collects three sets of stacks for the on the region. And with this, we also need the required doc again. Let's move on to slide 13. Okay, let's go in deeper into the stack dump scripts. We built these to automate the collection of stack dumps, so to make it easy on customers running the product. Because the CICS, depending upon how many application servers you have, you could have a large number of processes underneath the region. And it's hard to tell if you have multiple regions, you're out there scrambling to collect stacks from all these processes, it's hard to tell which region a stack is associated with, or one of these processes is associated with. So you're scrambling to do this, and you can, it's easy to make a mistake and pull stack from processes for another region or miss a stack for the region that you're trying to get. So what we did is we automated it. What the dump kick script does is it uses a utility called showprocinfo, which is a utility that came from Encina. And the showprocinfo uses the native debugger on the system. And for AIX and Solaris, we require that the DBX debugger be installed on the system. So that's what we'll be, the showprocinfo will be going for. On the HP systems, the default debugger is GDB. And so what we did is we made a different dump kick threads script for HP to point to the GDB debugger. Now Windows is a whole different other paradigm of collecting these stacks. So we had to we modified the showprocinfo from Unix to use the Windows utilities and collect the stacks. Now the CSPI utility that for Windows, it uses the, as I said, the Windows utilities, and it uses another utility from the resource toolkit called sleep. And it's important to have the sleep utility installed in the Windows directory where it can be executed. Because if you don't, the CSPI will not sleep between collections of the stacks, and you'll get three sets of stacks trying to be collected all at the same time. and it causes your system to go into a severe overload because it starts locking up the processes from the different grips trying to collect the stacks, and it can deadly embrace itself if it gets bad enough, or it may take a long time, or it could cause your Windows to crash. And down further on the second, the bottom of the page here, we have the URLs for the dump spreads utilities and for CSPI facility. Okay, let's move on to slide 14. Core dumps are needed. Now, sometimes in TX series, problems will cause core dumps to be automatically generated. And the core can be an important thing to have to try to figure out the cause of the issue. And if you've been around TX series back in the 4.2 or 4.3 days, you'll know when we generated cores back then, it was pretty far down the add bend routine, and we usually got a good core dump of us taking a shutdown of the region. But a lot has changed since then, and we've moved core dumps to be generated at the time the problem occurs so we can get a snapshot of the problem, not us shutting down the region. And that helps a lot in our problem determination. So what we do is we'll, for certain problems, we'll generate a core, and you'll find those in the dumpster one. Now, what we've been running into lately is people will turn off the core dump facility on the OS. And then when we generate a core dump, it will be severely restricted or it will just be an empty file. And for us to use the core dump file, it has to be a full core. There's a lot of information in there that we depend upon to locate different issues and different modules within TX series. So if we move on to page slide 15, we have instructions on enabling the core dump. And this happens differently for different operating systems. This is a explanation for AIX. And this is where we see most of the core dumps disabled. We haven't seen anything with Sun or HP or Windows having restricted core dumps so far. But we do have commands if we do for those operating systems if we run into that problem. So here on AIX, you want to check to see if the core dump facility is enabled on the system. Using the ls adder command, you'll get a with this with the parameters supply here. You'll see one line will come back, and it'll be, it'll say full core, true, enabled, full core dump, and the condition for that will be true. Now, if it's restricted, either one of these or both of these trues may be false. And if it is, you can run on the next line. We have the check dev device or check dev command for the core device, and this is the parameters on how to turn on the full core for the system at that point. And so after you run this check dev command, you can go back and run the full core command, and it should look like what's here on the presentation. And just as a general practice, the full core should be enabled on all your systems, so we don't have to go back and try to trigger the problem a second time to capture information that could have been generated on the first time the problem happened. And if it's a random problem that happens once every few weeks or maybe once every half a year, we may be out of ability to debug the issue that you did have. Okay, and there's other parameters that can also affect the core being generated. And this is one of them is the U limits. And there's soft limits and there's hard limits. And the one you want to take a look at is the core file limit. And you see underneath this the U limit dash C and the U limit dash C dash H. command here will turn the core file to unlimited, so it's not restricted to a certain size. You also may want to do this for file size. Sometimes you will find a system that has a file size restricted to maybe a couple megabytes, and that will affect the core generation also. Okay, let's move on to slide 16. Collecting trace. This is something that we ask for a lot. In the past, we used to collect it almost for every problem, but we've, with the ability to collect cores much closer to the problem origination, tracing isn't as important as it used to be. But in some circumstances, we may need a trace, especially if you're having communication issues or an application program issue. And there's a few different types of traces associated with TX series. There's region tracing that will trace the internals of the region. There's a command line tracing that we can gather when you're running a command, the CICFCP command. This is helpful for when the CICFCP command just pangs, or if the region won't start, or you see a problem where it's telling you that it's waiting to do something while it's trying to start one of the facilities. Okay, and there's also toolkit tracing, and this is usually we restrict this to the SFS and PPC, but we have asked for toolkit tracing inside the region and previously. That's most of the time that will happen for when you have a serious SFS or maybe a sync level 2 issue. And we can also ask for tracing with a VSA RPC facility. And this, we tend to do this when we have intercommunication problems and the processes are talking to each other. Okay, let's move on to slide 17. Okay, here's an overview of the basics of taking a region trace. This can be done one of two ways. If we ask for trace from startup, just go into the environment file for the region that I described before and put in the command CICS trace equals 1. And that turns on the trace as soon as the region is started, and tracing will continue until you shut it down dynamically or you stop the region. Okay, the next way to turn on trace is dynamically. And the three commands here, the CEMT set trace on, CECI trace system on, and CEMT set aux trace on. Doing these commands in this order, and specifically this order, will start the trace facilities within CICS, the same as the CICS trace equals 1 did. But this gives you the flexibility that you can start the trace after the region is up, and you can stage a test case that triggers the problem, get the test case all set up, then turn the trace on, execute the test case, and then turn the trace off. So we have trace of just the issue and not a bunch of other trace entries which won't relate to the problem and take a lot of space on the trace file and various trace files. And the trace is put in the data directory. Well, no, this is that statement's wrong. The trace will be in the dumpster 1 directory for the region. Now, this middle line here in the slide is wrong. So the data directory is not in there. It's in the dumpster 1 directory. Okay, now, once you turn the trace on dynamically like this, you need to turn it off. And when you turn it off, you run these commands in reverse. You do CMT set aux trace off, CMT or CECI trace system off, and then CEMT set trace off. So use these commands in reverse and set the parameter from on to off. And you'll see in the console file for the region that when the system trace is turned on, it'll notify you of that in the console. So you can verify if the trace is really turning on or not by checking the console when you did this. Another trace that's available is an EI trace. And this, what this EI trace does is it traces the execute interface blocks of the application program. This is this will give you the same information at a trace level that the EDF facility does online. Now, on the trace, it won't be allow you to get into the other data areas and so forth that you can with the EDF facility. But if you're looking for an application flow, you can turn on the EI and see what your application really is doing. You can also, if you have a transaction in a loop, you can turn on the EI trace and see what it may be looping between, what commands it'll be looping between. And to use the EDF facility, you do need to have the debugging turned on. The switches turned on for the programs when you compile them. So if you're creating a program, you should always use the dash D and dash E switches on your application compiles so you can get the CI trace if needed. You know, once all these traces are generated, we need to format them. And you'll see that there's a trace file for each process and for each thread within that process. So you have, like it's the ICS-AS process, which is the application server, you'll see trace for thread 1, thread 2, and thread 3. And this process may have upwards of 30 threads. And if they all become active, you'll see 30 different trace files for that process ID for that application server. So the trace files can be a large number of them can be generated in a short period of time, but they're all fairly short, and which helps us out in checking where problems really lay. In the old days, the trace was written to one file, and we would go through it, and we would be picking out trace entries for different processes out of the big file. So when we rewrote the trace facility, we generated the files per process, as opposed to having one large file. And also, having multiple files will help the efficiency of the trace, and it uses less overhead, and it slows down the region a lot less than what it used to. Now, once you have all these trace files sitting in the dumpster one directory, use the CICFT format command to format the trace. And what we see here is the command to format one trace file. You'll see that maybe you have 100 in there. So if we move on to the next slide, number 18, down at the bottom of this slide, we have the CICFT format command to format all the files in one shot. And this is using the CICFT FMT space asterisk. That's done a lot of work. And it may take 2, 3, maybe upwards of 5 minutes to format all these trace files. But once it's done, they're all there. You don't have to go back and check to make sure each one generated. You can feel confident that they all were formatted. Now this slide here, number 18, is command line tracing for the CICFCP command. And it's done a lot like the way we did for the region. We set the environment variable CICS trace equals 1. And here we have the command to do it for corn shell. And you'll see, like if you're using C shell or TC shell, you can use a set ENV CICS trace equals 1. And you can verify it by listing your environment and searching for CICS trace in your environment. And you'll see that set. Now when you do capture the trace for the CICSCP command, you'll find it ends up in the temp directory. The CICSCP command doesn't know what region that you're running this for, so it doesn't stick it under a specific region. It just goes out to temp directory. And the format of the file will be CICS, then the PID, and then CICS trace afterwards. And these are unformatted files also, so using the CICST FMT command, you can format one or all the files at one time. Let's move on to slide 18, or 19, thanks. Okay, toolkit tracing. This is basically for the SFS or PPC gateway servers. This is a holdover from the old Encina days where the SFS and the PPC were products of the Encina software. And these specifically were called toolkit servers because they were made from a specific version of Encina that offered a facility called toolkit. And these were developed with that facility. Okay, the tracing for an SFS and PPC are, they do it in ring buffers. And these ring buffers are kept internally. And then once you have the ring buffer generated, you can dump that ring buffer out to a file. And these files are dumped to the root directory for the SFS and PPC. And usually when we ask for a trace of the SFS or PPC, we'll give you a trace specification which to use and also the command on how to turn it on and off. Here we can see as we go down through, we have a sample trace spec request for a PPC gateway. And here we're collecting information for communications for a gateway. And then the next statement is a redirect trace command that will take the trace buffers when they're generated and dump them out to a file in the file system. Here the trace definition will be through the temp directory, and the files will start with kevin.temp. And there will be a number of these generated for each ring buffer, or one generated for each ring buffer. Sometimes we can generate this one file for the problem when we collect it. And when we turn, after we're done collecting trace, we can turn it off with pkadmin commands again. And we turn the redirection off, and then we turn the trace back to default. And just the internal trace of the critical event is captured as it was previously. Okay, let's go on to slide 20, and here's more information on tracing with the toolkit servers. We can set the toolkit parameters or requests to happen, for trace to happen when toolkit servers start up. And we do this with CICS underbar TK underbar trace commands. And we can, with these commands, we can set the ring size, set the trace spec, and set the file redirection with this. Now, these can be set in the system environment, or they can be set in a script that starts the PPC or the SFS. So the issues that you get when you set these at the system level is that you'll get trace for all of the toolkit processes, all the processes running toolkit server code. And when this also includes the region, because the region does use toolkit functions when it's talking to the SFS and when it talks to the PPC. So within this trace file, you'll not only get the PPC or the SFS tracing, you'll get the information from the region also for each process within the region. So sitting at the environment level can gather a lot of trace really fast on a lot of different processes. And this may be what we need if we see an overall communications issue between the two facilities of the region in the SFS or the region in the PPC. So when you set these environment variables, you have to restart the PPC or the SFS that you're trying to collect the information for. So as long as you don't restart the process, trace will not be collected. But when you do restart it, these will be picked up and trace will be generated. And then to turn the trace off, you have to shut down the processes, remove these environment variables, and restart the reagent or the PPC or the SFS, whichever one, or all of them. Okay, let's move on to slide 21. Okay. In the RD stanza, sometimes we find certain settings that aren't conductive to generating documentation. And some of these are holdovers if you've been migrating regions from like version 4 or version 5. There are some parameters that were set that would turn the trace off, and that's what we'll go over here now. Okay, the first two we take a look at here is core dumps name and core dump or dump name. What this does is they specify the directories in which the doc is generated for the region. And the dump name points to the dumps directory, and underneath that we have core dump name, and that's DIR1. Now you can change these to point to a different set of directories underneath the region. So if you wanted to go out to DIR2 or some other directory other than dumps, you can change these parameters to do that. But once you do that, you have to make sure that it is writing out to that directory and the CICS has permissions to it. This allows you to maybe create a larger file system in which to collect the documentation that we require, because some people don't like to allocate a lot of disk space for the region when it's not going to be used. So if you can change the directory here and send it out to a different file system. Okay, another parameter in the RD that we see a lot is the system trace spec. The default, if you build a new region, is all equals 4. And what this does is that's the level of tracing that's generated for the region. Back in version 5, in 5.1, we sometimes goes back and forth depending upon which PTF you have. And when you built the region, that this all may be equal to 0. And that means don't collect any trace. So even though you may turn on trace for a region, it's not generated. And this can be a cause for it. So what you have to do is go into the RD stanza for the region and change this all equals 4 or all equals 0 to all equals 4. And you'll see this in the console file when you start the region up. This trace system spec is printed out in the console. So you can look at the setting there to see if it's turned on or off. Okay, and the next parameter here is the direction of where the tracing files are put. Here we're pointing to the dumps directory, dumpster 1. As I said, with the core dumps, you can redirect this to a different spot in your file system if you need to have more space for what you're doing. Okay, another parameter that we can take a look at is safety level. And this is more of a debugging parameter than it is anything else. Safety level is the level of checking we do to our control blocks when we're coming and going from the different functions are coming and entering and being left. The safety level normal means we'll just do some minor checks along the way and we expect everything to be okay. Safety level normal means we'll be checking everything along the way. Safety level none means we won't be checking the control blocks, the start and the end addresses of the control blocks. So if you have problems where control blocks are being overwritten, you want to set the safety level equal to normal, and that will start throwing messages when blocks are being overwritten and we notice them when they're being checked here with the normal setting. Another parameter in the RD file that we find that gets altered every once in a while is the stat file parameter. This is the name of the stats file that's generated with the CICS statistics. By default, it's called stats file, and then you'll see the stats file in the data directory along with the CSMT and the CCIN files. if you go to pick up this file and you can't find it, you need to take a look in the RD stanza and look at the stats file parameter to ensure that it is what name is the stats file is being generated with. And sometimes it is set to null, and which causes issues. Okay, let's move on to slide 22. An additional environment variable. CSS Core on Azure. You may be having an application issue where it's overwriting memory, it may be running out of bounds, maybe generating a signal 4 or signal 11. And what we do is we have a parameter that you can set in the region environment file. And what it will do is automatically generate an Azure dump or a core dump for an Azure condition that we see. And the Azure condition is basically when you have memory issues for an application. Just like you did on the mainframe, you would generate an Azure dump when you, like you and your COBOL program will go out of bounds, or if it tried to divide by zero and that sort of thing. So we put this parameter in here because sometimes an Azure dump isn't really caused by an application program, so it's hard to capture a core on this, and the core will give us everything that's in the region. So when we request this core on Azure, we're looking to see that this program, this Azure condition, is caused more by the region than it is the application. Okay, let's move on to page 23, slide 23. Okay, this is submitting problem documentation to IBM. This is one of the most important pieces here. It's getting the doc to us. First, we need to have a PMR open for the problem that you are experiencing. Once you have a PMR open, you use the PMR number to create a file, and this file is either a zip file or a tar and compressed file. And what we'd like you to do is, instead of FTPing all these files one by one up to our doc collection facility, we want everything compressed into a file. And the name of the file starts with the PMR number. So if you had PMR 12345, the file will be named 12345 dot in your country code and then dot in your geocode. And then you can, after that, you can use any other description that you would like. So you can say files from a certain date or a certain condition. If you're on AIX, you can pull all these files back into your Windows box and use zip, or you can keep them on your Unix box and use bzip or gunzip, or you can just use the basic tar and compress utilities. And some people send in RAR files. So we get a .rar. That's a nice compression method, but what it does in our document collection facility is it treats it as a RAR file, which is a Java file. And so when we go to interrogate it and open it up, it doesn't treat it as a zip file, and we have issues sometimes getting it down to the local computer, or trying to get it to open up correctly, or maybe to unpack another zip or tar file that's inside of that RAR. So, if possible, we'd like you not to use the RAR extension or the RAR utility when you're compressing these files. Okay, now when you upload these to our document collection facility, there are many different ways you can do it. You can do it with FTP. You can do it with a secure FTP if you feel that it may be critical data in the files. You can use HTTP and transfer it through your browser, or you can use HTTPS, or you can attach the zip file to a email back to us at cicsupport.acurep.ibm.com. And to the here's the URL for the document collection facility that we call ECU Rep. And This is the global facility in which IBM collects documentation from customers. And if you look at this URL, it explains all the different methods in which you can send the documentation to IBM. And explains how to set it up and what you need to do for each one of these FTP, HTTP, or email methods you want to use. Fairly extensive and very useful facility. So when we ask for doc, we'll ask you to send it to there. Let's move on to page 24. Okay, this concludes the session for today. In summary, we've covered what debugging information is, why it's needed, when to collect it, what to collect in different situations, how to collect the documentation, and where to send the documentation once you collect it. So this is a good presentation on the basics of collecting documentation with the TX series. So now it's back to Dave.
Thank you, Kevin, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program better for you. We do welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Marianne, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, there are no questions.
Thank you, Marianne. I also don't see any questions in the group chat. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks again very much for joining us today, and thank you, Kevin, for presenting today.